Excellent. Thank you very much. So now we can start with the talk. Raphael is going to talk about effortless distributed computing in Python. So take it away.
Hey, can you hear me well? Fine? OK. So my name is Raphael. I'm a software engineer. And over the past few months, I contributed to a few new libraries for a client. And I would like to showcase them. So all the libraries are related to distributed computing. So I will present three libraries. The first one, it's we named it Scalar. So it's a kind of distributed system for Python. So you can send Python tasks, and it will route them to some workers, different computers, do the computation, and then return the result. On top of that, we made Parfun. So it's a very small library that you can use to do MapReduce. So I will explain what MapReduce is. And the last one is PowerGraph. It's another library that we developed to do distributed graph computation. So graph is when you have dependencies between tasks. So we'll start with Scalar. This is really the core of what we did. It looks a bit like Dask for those we know, you know. Since Python 3.2, you can use the process pool executor to submit tasks to different processes, Python processes on your machine to do some kind of parallel computing. So this is an example. So you start a pool of four workers in this case. I'm not going to use all of them. And you submit two functions, two square root, with different parameters. And the executor will not return the result immediately, but a future. So a future is just an object that will at some point contain the result. And then you can just print and use the result, but Python will block if the result is not ready yet. So if the computation that happened on another process didn't finish yet. So it's an easy way to do parallelization in Python. And what we wanted to do is to not only be able to send processes to different cores, but also to different machines. So we created an infrastructure. So instead of using the process pool, you use our client that connects to a cluster. And you can submit tasks the same way. So it's totally transparent. It will serialize the function, the argument, and then fetch back the result. It's similar to Dask. I can talk about the difference after the talk, if some are interested. So the architecture is like this. You've got the scheduler, which is the central point of our system. And then you can add as many workers as you want that are on different machines. And the scheduler is responsible for accepting functions and tasks from the client and redirecting them to the worker that have resources available. So I would like to show a small example. So we are going to make a parallel implementation of the Monte Carlo approximation of pi. So the approximation of pi using Monte Carlo is basically you take a square and you put random point, you generate random points on that square, and you count the points that fall inside the circle that is in this square. And on the example on the left, if you count the points that are in green inside the circle, you divide that by the total number of points. You multiply that by 4, you will get an approximation of pi. So 3.2 is pretty close. Points you had, the closer to pi you get. So this is the example I'm going to use in the next slide. So if you want to do that in Python, first you have to define what is when a point is inside a circle. So you take the trigonometric equation for the circle. You check that the point is inside the circle. It doesn't matter much. It's just for the example. And then you do the Monte Carlo estimation. So you generate random coordinates, so x's and y's. And you filter to the points that are inside the circle. And you count them. You multiply that by 4 and divide it by the number of points. And you get an estimate of pi. So the more points you had, so this is the function run, the more points you had, the closer to pi you will get. And this is a sequential version. And if you run it with 100,000 points, it's already quite slow, maybe a few seconds. But it gets closer to pi. So what if we would like to scale that further and first do it on multiple cores and then on multiple machines? So we're going to make another function that will use the first one. The function, what it will do is that it will split the number of points that you want to generate by, in this case, 100. And for each of this subset of points, it will start a task. So this is here, the submit. It will start 100 tasks that each have 100 of the number of points. Then you average the result. So this sum is doing the average. So how does it compare to the sequential one? So the sequential one, if you want to do it on 1 billion points, it will take about 7 minutes. So it's quite slow. If you use the Python built-in executor with 8 cores, so this is this laptop, you will get it in 57 seconds. So it's already way faster. And if you use our Scalar client, this is on a big cluster. We have 135 cores on that one. You see that the computation is 12 seconds. So it's 35 times faster than the other one. So this is basically how you can do parallel computation with Scalar. We have additional features. Like this one, it's a kind of equivalent to edge top. So you can see the status of the server. All the cores, you know how much CPU usage they have, you know how many clients are connected to the cluster, and you also have the status of the scheduler, which is really the central point of our infra. We have failure recovery, which means that if a work dies while it is computing a task, the scheduler will immediately reroute all the tasks that the worker was responsible for to available workers. We have also dynamic load balancing. Like, if one worker has too many tasks and just cannot make progress, that might happen if some of your tasks are way longer to compute than others. It will reroute all the tasks that the worker accumulated on available workers. So that's for Scalar. And on top of that, we made a library that you can use to do MapReduce. So I'm going to explain what MapReduce is. So another example, you want to count the words that you have inside a text. So you've got this count words function. So it accepts a list of lines. So it's every sentence is an item in the list. And you just go through all the lines and all the words, and you just accumulate and count the words. And then when you run it on a small file, you will get, obviously, that the most common words are D, end, and off. But what if we want to do this on a very large data set, like something that is gigabytes? And what if we want the result to be fast? You can use the MapReduce pattern. So MapReduce is basically you take the input, you split the input in different batches or partitions, you process all these partitions and batches separately, and then you have a function that combines the result. So Paraffin just helps you doing that. So it's a decorator, so you take the original function, you don't change anything to the function that you have. You just say that, okay, I've got this function, I want to parallelize it. I want to chunk the data in by batches. So in this case, we have predefined function for list. So the first argument of the decorator says, I want the input data to be splitted in whatever the size is, but in batches of lines. And then I want to execute the function. And finally, I will combine the result with the sum. So you can sum counters, and you will get the total sum. So by doing this, you can call the function totally transparently, like this one, with a way larger file, and actually it will run on multiple computers if you're using Scalar on top. And something that is very important with Parfen is that you don't specify the size of the batches. You don't specify how you're going to split you're not going to specify the size of the small task. So you don't know how many tasks will be created. because finding the optimal batch size for computation is quite hard. Like, if it is too small, so if you create too many tasks, you will spend a lot of time just trying to transfer data, communicating, and doing some synchronization stuff, maybe IPC if you're running on a single machine. And if your subtasks are too large, like if you split the data in too large chunks, you will not get that much parallelization. So you want something that is smart about that. So we use machine learning. So the decorator, when you use it, this is the debug information, it will automatically deduce what is the optimal size of the partitions of the batch. So in this case, it deduced after some tries that computing the function in batches of 1,600 lines, it's actually quite efficient. By doing that, you will only spend 5% of the time doing communication and IPCs, and you get a nice speed up. So this is totally transparent, and that's probably the main feature of our MapReduce thing. And lastly, we have Paragraph. So it's, again, another library that you can use on top of Scalar. And this one is really designed to do graph computation. I've got a third example. So you want to generate a report. And your report, it opens a file, it reads the file, it pre-processes the files, but it also goes to a database, and it will extract the email addresses, and then finally it will send the report to all these email addresses. So if you are into distributed computing, you will notice that actually you can run this two set of code, block of code separately and in a parallelized way, because they're not dependent. They're only dependent here. So what we have is two additional decorators that allows you to define graphs in a declarative way in Python. So first we have the delayed one. The delayed one, you will define what is your graph leaves. So what are the smallest function that you don't want to parallelize? And we just had delay to all the subtasks. So remember, we had this read data file, read progress table, extract emails, all these functions, all the ones that are in green and orange. Yeah, you just say that these are leaves of your graph, and then the parent function, the one that is calling the other function, you say that it is a graph. And by doing that, when you request the graph representation of this computation, it will be able to actually not really run the function, so it will inspect the function, and it will be able to generate a graph that represents the computation. And here we see that we have two paths that we can take to do the computation in a distributed way. And once you have this graph, you can export it and run it on Scalar, so we have a special function. You can also run it on Dask, it's the same format. And that's basically the idea. And I'm a little bit early, so I have a lot of time for questions, and thank you.
Oh, okay, thank you very much.
Just before the question, we released that a few months ago under Apache 2, and we welcome contributors and issues, anything you have, just it's on GitHub.
Thanks for the presentation.
How are you? Okay.
For the graph representation, can you represent more advanced graph structures, including...
Oh, sorry, what?
Can you represent more complicated graph structures with...
Yeah, this one was very simple.
Closing branches, and first question, and second question, is it meant then to run using the other libraries you mentioned, or is it like just async functions that run on the side, or how?
So, to the first question was, can you represent complex graphs? So this one, it's a very simple one. but you can do kind of recursive graphs or even graphs that have loops. This one only has one nested level, but you can have how many levels you want. What the graph library is doing is that it's overriding all the Python operators. So when you run the function, it actually doesn't run the function. It just generates a kind of syntax tree, and you re-extract the graph from that. So unless the operator is not correctly designed, it should work. And the format for which we generate the graph is the same as Dask, which is another parallel library. So you can run it on Dask and on Scalar. Was it the second one?
Was it meant to be used with that other libraries you said?
Or yeah, it's compatible. Like the format, it's pretty standard. It's a Python dictionary.
Okay, I'm just going to read one question that was written in the chat. So it says, with full scalar, how does it handle Python dependencies? Say if you need a PyPy package installed on for your task, do you need to make sure that it's on your nodes in advance?
Yeah, so we are using Cloud Pycl. So it's basically the same constraints as Cloud Pycl. So you might want to have the libraries installed. However, you can override the serializer. So if you want to do something more complex, you could technically do it. But yeah, that's one of the complexities. You have to install the libraries on all the machines, ideally.
Hello, thank you for your talk. What is the relation between Scala and something like Celery?
Oh, Celery, I never used it, but it's mostly a queue. I don't think it uses the executor interface, but I might be wrong. I never used it. Sorry, I don't know much about Celery, so I cannot really answer.
Hi. Thanks for the interesting presentation. I was wondering about testing. Do you have support like if I have these decorators, can I disable them during testing, or how do
How do I? Yeah, for the graph, actually, so if you don't call the toGraph, it just looks like a Python function. So you can just run it sequentially. And for Parafun, we actually renamed the original function. So you just had two underscore sequential, and you get access to the original function. You can also disable it on the system-wide system by calling some function.
Okay. And a second question, if I may. With Parfum, there's no explicit connection to Scalar. Is that like something under the hood?
Yeah, it's okay. You have to set up this in the... You can either create a context, you know, the with something in Python, or you set up the backend on the word process. That's the two way we handle that.
Thanks.
So you can define the function and use different backends and call the function using different backends at the same time.
Cool.
Yeah, thanks for the presentation. I have two questions. One, how do you set up the cluster? I think you mentioned Cloud Python. Is that?
No, it's just regular processes. So we just have, let me get back to the. So these two things are just Python programs. So you just store the programs and they all connect to some IP address. Or whatever you want to use.
Do you have some configuration?
It's just Python commands. So all the configuration is in the parameters. So okay. In the arguments.
Okay, thanks. And on the failure scenario, you saw how to recover from a worker failing. What if the scheduler instead is failing?
Yeah, then you're done.
Okay.
Yeah, we.
I have a question in terms of the worst case scenario. Do you mind going to a slide where one of the cluster nodes dies? Yeah, so I'm wondering, just because of the syntax, I know the syntax in the Py example, like you run the scheduler, it runs all the jobs, and then at the end it sums up together so you can get like the result of Py. On a worst case scenario, let's say the cluster dies or all the nodes die, like one of the jobs never completes. Like, what happens to that computation? What happens to that syntax where you're adding stuff and you end up adding like a none, let's say, or?
Yeah, you mean if your process, so you're running a process that is so long that it prevents?
Let's say one of the nodes just dies and you never get a response and you're adding over multiple processes, like, does it return a none and then it tries to add a none and then you get like an error in Python?
I'm not sure I understand, but the workers are constantly connecting to the scheduler. So if you lose the connection, it's a kind of ping. So if the latency became too big, like 1 minute, the worker would be considered as dead, and all the tasks would be redirected.
But if the worker is never able to answer, what does the scheduler return to that? Like if it never gets an answer for a job?
Oh, but if this one dies, the scheduler keeps the task on it. Yeah, it's parameter. We have a parameter for that. So. If you don't store the task on the scheduler, obviously it will answer an exception to the client. But by default, we store the task object, so the arguments and the function code, basically, and we can reroute the task.
Thank you.
And another one, I know there was other. Yeah. I had another question for the graph execution one. Can the graph be modified while it's running, or you have to compile it beforehand and then it's static?
You could technically modify it yourself. Like, as I said, it built a kind of abstract tree of the computation as a Python dictionary, so you could technically access it and modify it, but the library doesn't do it.
How do the how does the system handle data exchange between workers? Like, the result of a function is in the graph is returned and is needed by another function?
You mean for the graph computation?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it will not send the task unless these are needed. So we have it's handled on the scheduler side, on the client side. So we're not queuing the task to the workers until we have the argument ready.
Okay, so the client waits for the data to come back, and then it's like, okay, now next task that's scheduled, we'll get that input.
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, if you have like a function, and there are dependencies between them,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Data dependencies. So one function as its input take the output of another function.
Yeah.
Like, how does that data flow from one?
Oh,
and they might be scheduled on different.
It doesn't workers. Get back to the client unless you request it.
Okay.
So it's the scheduler, it will, let's say that the worker on top wants to execute a function that executed there. So we get the data back to the scheduler and then it gets back to the other worker that needs the input.
Just a quick one. Maybe I got distracted and haven't got that part. The batch size that you mentioned, is it something that you need to make the bookkeeping of the size of it, or is it somewhere automatically in the background calculated?
It's calculated. So we.
It's calculated?
Yeah, okay. We have an AI. No, it's basically machine learning. It's a regression. So it looks at the function when you execute it, and it tries different batch size. And after a few tries, it will deduce that the optimal one is whatever it is. And it will continue to learn. So if you change the parameters, for example, and suddenly the function doesn't behave the same, it will start to relearn.
Okay, thank you.
So I think that's it in terms of questions. Thank you very much. There's one more, sorry.
You've got 58 seconds.
This is
six,
the last one.
Seven.
So coming from Kubernetes, it looks similar design. The biggest problem in Kubernetes are CPU limit, memory limit, even I/O limit. Mm-hmm. So how do you deal with that?
So we've got a feature. So I'm working on it. It will be released next week. But we have what we call tags. So every worker can have specific tags. So it's just symbols, strings, and you can say, oh, this one has a lot of memory, and then when you submit the task, it will only be redirected to the worker that have this specific tag. So, yeah, that might kind of handle that. And if you want to limit the CPU usage inside the process, you have to run in C groups or things like that. You have to deal with that on the operating system level.
Okay, so thank you very much.
Zero.
Thank you very much.
Very nice talk. Oh, thanks.